Hello and welcome to this episode of Corporate Buzz. I'm your host, Keetana Tiwari, and as always, I'm here with Money Control's Corporate Bureau Chief, Prince Thomas, for all the top updates in the corporate news this week. Hi, Prince. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Keetana. Thank you so much.
Prince, let's begin with the IT sector. We saw a lot of Q3 results coming in this week. Can you tell us which ones, did really well?
So, Keetana, we already seen that the IT companies have done extremely well. Many of them have gone beyond the pre-COVID levels. And we've seen not just the top four IT firms, but even the mid-tier ones have done well in the Q3.
Right.
And then we have seen some of the other companies like JSPL, which is a steel manufacturer. It's also done very well. And we are expecting very similar numbers from some of the other FMCG retail companies too, where there would be, quite a quarter-on-quarter improvement. And in some cases, there could be that they are even surpassing the pre-COVID levels. So it surely is a very unusual Q3, because Q3 in many ways may not be the most strongest quarter for all the sectors. So it's an interesting time.
Prince, was there any surprise element in the IT sector results?
Yeah, so it was surprising, Keetana, because third quarter is seasonally not the strongest, because this is when much of the clients in the biggest markets, which is the US and Europe, many of them close shop because of the festival season and things like that. So, and you don't see many of the big deals happening in third quarter. Business takes a slow turn. But this is the unusual year, and we've seen in the first two quarters, especially on the indication being that, by the second quarter, things were improving. But still long way to go from the pre-COVID times. So third quarter, each IT company, starting from TCS to Infosys, Wipro, HCL, and even to mid-tier companies, they have done well, most of them. And we've seen that one other indication is on the hiring. The hiring has really picked up. It's in many cases the double of what the second quarter hiring was.
Right.
And even more higher than what the third quarter last year was. So I think many of these are a pleasant surprise and surely good news to have.
Right. And in the coming quarters, what is expected, Prince? Obviously, the budget is going to be one important factor that will determine this. Apart from that, will there be anything else that companies are looking forward to?
So, a few things that really helped IT companies. So, one was the deal, they were really aggressive on deals, and many of them notched up really record number of deals. Second was that all their clients are looking to cut costs because of the pandemic. And ironically, one way to cut costs is to invest in digital or cloud, So, in spaces like that. And all of this is good news for IT companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the hiring has also increased, and hiring has been, among freshers, mid-level management. And these all reflect that, things are coming back to the normal. The fourth quarter, what one would like to see is if the number of deals on the deal space will continue to, the momentum will continue, and by how much it will continue. And also the whole digital transformation that's happening, that will also be interesting. So very much depends upon how the markets in the US and Europe pan out. In the US, we know, there's been a huge change in the administration now. And that's why itself there's some positive vibes coming out of there. From the visa point of view itself, there's a huge change in the first couple of days itself of the new administration. So I think all these are positive sentiment around IT sector right now. And I think investors and anyone else tracking the sector would hoping to be, continue this.
Hello. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. And as you mentioned, due to the change in administration in US, that will also bring in a lot of hope. There has also been a lot of talk about Biden's immigration bill, which we also discussed in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. Now, it looks like it may come earlier than we thought. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what will be the highlight of it?
So this was one of the many things that the new president signed on, and to reverse what his predecessor Donald Trump had put across. And I think the immigration was one big focus for the Trump administration, and it happens to be another big focus for the Biden administration, but in a very different tenor. And by reversing some of the policies that Trump had, I think Biden is again opening up the U.S. You know, the U.S. dream, the whole concept had kind of become subdued in the last 4 years. I think the attempt is to again make U.S. the prized destination for the best talent available anywhere in the world. And we know that talent from India, for them, U.S. has been one of the focus destinations. And it, this immigration bill that Biden has signed, it works across segments. So it's not just the IT techies we are talking about, but it also helps students. It also helps people who don't have documents. So it seems there are around 5 lakh Indians who've been, were stuck in India and they've not got the citizenship because they don't have documents.
Right.
Now, even they may benefit from this. So, and then the whole backlog, the delays in renewals, all those things that were kind of troubling people in the last few years, I think this bill has the promise to counter all of them. We'll have to see how fast all of this happens, because it's not an easy thing. There would be debate and things like that. But the start is very promising, and I think it's good news for IT firms and students and professionals.
Right. And in the last year, we saw many Indians who have been settled in America who lost their jobs after several years of work experience. Mm-hmm. And they yet to look for another opportunity. Will there be any relief for them?
Yeah, so there were concerns like that. You know, we saw that some of the professionals who had come visiting India and got stuck because of pandemic, but they couldn't go back because they either lost their jobs or their visa processing was taking time because many of the consulates were closed. Now, many of that, much of that uncertainty may go off now.
Okay.
It's not just because, you know, overall, well, the U.S. is still under the pandemic threat. I mean, there's still the loss of life is high and continues to spread. But still, overall, if you look, I think, be it in Europe or India, I think the economy is largely recovering. And I think that will be the case in much of the international markets too. So this year would surely be a better tidings for everyone. And I think those who have lost jobs or were stuck because of lack of visa, I think much of their concerns may also get addressed.
Right. Now moving on to the auto sector, Prince, we hear that the German luxury automotive company BMW, they're planning to bring in 25 new models to India so that they can boost their own growth. Two questions here. One is, how is India conducive to help them, and what does India gain out of this?
Yeah, so I think Krita, it underlines the importance of the Indian market. Now 2020, surely I think the luxury segment of Indian car market, I think, got shaved off. About 40% of it got shaved off. But then I think this year, all the companies, including BMW, they all are looking to not just retain their market share, but also it's an opportunity for all of them to also probably increase their market share. Because for sure, Mercedes-Benz has been, you know, kind of the number one in the segment for the last 5-6 years. But BMW and Audi and others would like to wrest back some of the market share. So it's not just BMW. Surely 25, 26 is a huge number, which is like two new models, two new products every month. At the same time, even Mercedes-Benz, JLR, Audi, Volvo, they all have lined up quite a few product launches this year. And they surely are looking at, you know, not just surpassing getting back to pre-COVID levels. And in fact, one of the luxury car makers said that by December itself, they had reached pre-COVID level. But they're trying to go much beyond that.
We also have been talking a lot about electric cars, Prince. How many of these, models from luxury brands would be electric vehicles?
I think it's still a tiny number. About, I think, less than 5 of these would be EVs. Where I think EVs in India are still to pick up, because one, the price is a concern, and then you have the infrastructural challenges. And especially if we compare the Indian EV market to, say, in China, I think we're still very much underdeveloped. But I think there is a lot of awareness, and companies are also doing their bit to push EVs.
Right.
So and not just in the luxury market, for sure, I think there is an appetite for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen even in the other segments, there are newer products coming in. And in fact, Tata Motors, well, it has JLR, and the JLR segment itself is coming out with an EV. But Tata Motors itself has done very well in EV space. So we will surely be hearing more on EV space also this year.
Right. It's surely refreshing to hear these developments ever since, you know, the slowdown in the auto sector from 2019 that we have been seeing.
Sure.
Moving on to the aviation sector, IndiGo had announced 7 new stations in India, which are in smaller cities. Can you tell us about why they have decided to, you know, set stations in smaller cities?
Yeah, it's coming from IndiGo in the sense, see, the whole trend has been talked about for a few years, because ever since the government announced this Udaan scheme for regional connectivity, there has been talk and stress about developing connectivity in the smaller tier 2-3 cities. And some work has been happening, routes were awarded to airlines, but then these haven't really taken off. You know, even the regional airlines that had taken off, that had started services, many of them closed down because there was not enough demand.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the last 1 year, what has happened is, because of COVID and because reverse migration happened, much of the traffic when flights resumed was from metro cities to smaller cities. You know, you're talking about places like Patna, Srinagar, Banaras, even further interior places where much of the traffic was happening. So the traffic, say in Mumbai-Delhi route, which is traditionally the busiest in India, actually went down, and the top 5 busiest routes were all to the smaller cities. So I think that brought about quite a dramatic shift in the Indian aviation. And also one big component for Indian traffic growth was the corporate travel. Now, because of COVID, everyone shifted to, Zoom meetings, video calls and conferences. And even though things are improving, I don't think corporate travel will ever go back to its, the kind of levels it was seeing during the pre-COVID times.
Right.
Companies have found a way to really limit their travel costs. So all this means that the travel between metros, which during festival or summertime is about family, holidaying and leisure, but at the rest of the year, it's all about business.
Mm-hmm.
So much of that may not happen now. And that's why that is also contributing to the shift to the smaller cities. So the IndiGo's move is keeping in line of this trend that's happening. And IndiGo in many ways has been a trendsetter, and to be fair here, it's not just IndiGo, even other airlines like SpiceJet or GoAir have also started pushing and setting up bases in smaller cities. But this is the overall trend that's happening in the Indian aviation. And another interesting point is that if you look at the aircraft movement, which is an indication of how much an airport is getting in terms of traffic, in about 15 airports, it has already reached pre-COVID levels, and each of these 15 airports are the ones in tier 2 and tier 3 cities.
Okay.
So they have already reached the pre-COVID level and surpassed those levels. So the trend is surely there. The question mark surely would be that how much of this can really continue. Traffic will come back to metro. It would. But I think the shift that's happened to the smaller cities, it's much stronger this time, and some of it will surely remain.
Right. And if by chance, things do go back where many offices are calling back their employees, then how would this trend look like? Would there still be people flying to smaller cities?
There would be, because these are places which are also being developed locally. For instance, many of the smaller places are also close to education hubs or industrial hubs.
Mm-hmm.
But people always had to take that train and buses to go to the closest airport. Now, in many of these new airports that have come up, these are places which are close to these hubs. So they'll always have that traffic coming in. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about reverse migration. So surely, and even people who are able to afford it, they have understood how much time they have saved by taking a flight rather than going by a train or a bus. And we should remember that many of these regional connectivity, the fares are low. And in fact, the government incentivizes the airlines by giving them subsidies. So fares are low. And as long as the fares are low and you have more airlines coming in and the competition sets in, I think the fares would be low enough for people from all segments of the society to start taking flights even more.
Right.
So this shift will surely be, I think, long term.
Right. It'll certainly be interesting to see how this trend pans out.
Yes. You know, just 2 days ago, I saw someone tweeting that that his cook for 21 years, who every Holi he goes to his hometown by train. For the first time in 21 years, he's booked a flight ticket.
Okay.
So these kind of instances will surely increase.
Right. Moving on to some, lighter news, Prince. This week we saw the Indian cricket team win the Test Series in Australia. Mm-hmm. And they've come back home. And this must be an interesting time where Indian corporates are looking to tie up with such star players for ad campaigns. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it looks like at this point?
Yeah, because it's interesting because, see, the series was special not just because we defeated Australia and defeated them on pitches that were traditionally being very strong for Australia, mm-hmm. but also because this was almost like a second-tier team, India team, because you didn't have the frontline bowlers and you didn't have the captain and some of the important batsmen. So this was like an India's B or C team which defeated the full strength Australian team. Mm-hmm. So what's happened is that the whole charm or the importance of a star player, I think, has gone down. And that's what I think will happen in the brand space also.
Okay.
So what companies will discover now is that you have a bunch of players who are young, promising, and who have very interesting stories in their own growth as players, because many of them come from very modest backgrounds, mm-hmm. and have struggled their way up. So they themselves are a very interesting story. And these players have a certain appeal to customers. You know, if you look at the whole Twitter or other social media discussion that happened ever since that series victory, mm-hmm. it centered around these players, you know, and it was not focusing on any of the other stars. And that actually is an opportunity that the companies would really want to use, because one, they are popular, they are great success stories, and second, and equally important would be that their endorsement fees will be much lower. Mm-hmm. So if you have a Virat Kohli who charges 5 or 6 crore per brand per year, mm-hmm. you'll have a Shubham Gill or Rishabh Pant whom you can sign up for, say, about 1 or 2 crores.
Okay.
So I think that opens up immense possibilities. And you have these upcoming sectors, like you have the gaming companies who have started advertising a lot. For instance, right. The IPL main sponsor is a gaming company. Not just gaming, but also education company, edutech companies, mm-hmm. e-commerce companies. They all are looking at, you know, not just the metros and the big players, but they're also looking at players who have come from the smaller places, because they also want to penetrate their market presence into these places. So I think this is an immense opportunity. And when you look at an economy which is recovering from COVID and you're looking for success stories and positivity, I think all this gels well for companies who are looking for new brand endorsements and brand ambassadors.
So we'd be definitely seeing a series of different ads with cricket players.
Yeah, for instance, a company which is concentrated in, you know, say in southern India, you have someone like Natarajan or Mohammad Siraj, who are, Siraj is from Hyderabad, Natarajan is from a place close to Salem. So they would go for them, you know. And if you want someone who has an All India appeal, you would go for Shubham Gill or Rishabh Pant, mm-hmm. who will, you know, right now their ad rates would be less than half of what a Virat Kohli or even retired players like MS Dhoni command. So, so that's a great opportunity to have.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prince, for all these details.
Welcome, Kitna.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Corporate Buzz. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.